This is Painting the Tape, a podcast by traders for traders. Join us as we embark on the journey of the game we love, tick by tick.
All right. Welcome to episode 2 of Painting the Tape. I'm Stowe. I have Leo and AJ with me. And yeah, here we are. How you guys doing?
I'm great.
Feeling very refreshed. Recently came back from a little vacation, and volume and ranges are back in the market.
Where did you go, AJ?
We did a little...
Tell the people.
My wife is carrying my seed, and we... We did a little baby moon action. We did Charleston, South Carolina. We hit the Masters, and then we spent a few days in Florida. So we're feeling really good.
That's awesome. Nice.
Yeah, I got to figure out how to... I have a 15-year-old digital camera with some great pictures, and I have no idea how to get them from the camera onto the computer. There's no USB, no mini HDMI. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I got to get...
Oh, yeah. Augusta. So they're like, fuck your phone. If we see a phone, you're dead.
No phones. So there's no phones during any rounds. You're allowed to have digital cameras during the practice rounds, which is where we went. And basically everyone there just has like a camera that they don't know how to use. So like people are we're trying to help each other take photos of each other, and it's taking way too long. But we definitely got some good shots on there. I just don't know how to get them.
Fuck, man. You should have got, like, do they still have disposable cameras you can get from the drugstore or whatever?
A lot of people do that. And they actually kind of come out kind of cool. It's like a little retro vibe. So
maybe that's awesome. Enough.
Yeah.
Well, how'd you dudes trade this week? It's only Wednesday, so we're 3 days into 5. How are we doing? Was it safe?
It was safe. I personally made some mistakes on Monday and didn't do too bad yesterday or today. But we're doing okay. We're safe. We're doing well.
That's cool. Mondays have had my fucking number, man. Mondays have not been safe for Stowe at all.
Maybe Mondays. Yeah, Mondays don't sound like they're safe for you.
No, they do. They're not.
I traded pretty well. Traded much better last week. I started off Monday pretty well. Gave a little bit back on that that squeeze. Eventually then got back by, I guess, late morning drawdown. Yeah, yesterday was pretty strong for me, and I wasn't able to trade today. But I've definitely been trading way better in April than I did towards the end of March. That's for sure. I'm just grateful for volume and rotations and some volatility.
Cool. Well, the good thing about this episode is we're not just going to talk about nothing and ourselves the entire time. We're actually going to dive into some long form discussion, which is something we're going to do for every episode, I think. This first one is going to be about execution as a whole. And yeah, you guys want to talk about what we're going to get into?
Yeah. So like Stowe said, this is going to be, you know, we're going to go into a topic in pretty decent detail, pretty much every episode. The goal here is just to kind of, you know, we're going to share our experiences. We're not trying to be trading coaches and say this is the way to do things and you all should be doing it too. Nobody can tell anyone else the way they should be trading. We all have to find that out for ourselves. So we're just trying to share our experiences. If you take something away from it, positive, that you can incorporate into your trading, that's great. If you get a fresh perspective on something that you either hadn't heard about, you know, that's great too. But we're not trying to tell you what to do. We're just trying to share what we do, and maybe it'll benefit you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big, broad point we should make right out the gate before we start to talk about anything, is that like, this is all just how we all do things. And I personally have learned so much from just listening and paying attention to the way that other people do things and how I can apply that to my own trading. Not necessarily copying what other people are up to, but if it gives you an idea, if it gives you a inspiration of some kind, like that sort of thing.
Do you have something you want to add to it, Leo?
On that point, you know, I think the part of my journey, a lot of figuring out what works for me is actually listening to other people and kind of taking an amalgamation, you know, kind of like you take a big bucket of sand, right? And you run it through a filter. And I think that's true with all information is, you know, like a bucket of sand, you pour it through a filter. And at the end of the filter, you know, once all the sand is run through, then you have, you know, purified sand or, like, you know, it's better. It doesn't have the rocks. And I think that's a great way to approach trading or trading concepts is take a lot of information from various sources or various places and run it through your own filter and, you know, figure out, you know, what's going to work best for you, your style, your personality. And that's what I did to come up with some of the way that I trade today. And, you know, to be honest, some of it was watching other people and going, that's actually not how you should do it. So there's good information to be learned from how to not do things is just as much as there is from, you know, how to do things or how to do something better.
Yeah, I think the sifting analogy you use is pretty good. And in the example, like, oh, everything that passes through the filter is like shit. And then you're left with like little golden nuggets, maybe one nugget per person that you listen to, right?
Right.
And you take those things and you're like, you know what? I've collected quite a little nuggets, a lot of nuggets at this point, and I could actually, you know, build a bracelet or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, borrowing from people, but also sifting through the bullshit is, I think it's a skill that we all are constantly working on throughout the trading journey.
Yes, for sure.
Why don't we start by just talking about where we started for each of us in our execution? Like,
so, yeah, that sounds
right
good.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
I'll just go real quick. I started off kind of all in all out scalping ES. So basically trading ES with a 3-point stop, looking for, you know, a set 2R more or less. I would basically put on one mini and then have a target and basically hope that worked. When I first started that, it didn't work, not necessarily because of the execution style, but because I was just shit at trading because I had just started out. So that was a problem. And then I kind of abandoned the target and I was like, well, I'll just scale out discretionary with my discretion. And what would happen is because I have one mini, I would, if I got a trade that was really going, I'd be like, oh, well, let's see how far this could go. And I would just never take profit and then eventually get stopped out, leaving like a 15-point trade on the table. And I struggled with that for probably like six to 12 months, honestly. It was a lot longer than I care to admit, but I didn't have anyone else to learn from. And so, yeah, that didn't work for me, but that's where I started.
I was pretty similar in the sense that, like, I started all in, all out. You know, that was the way to go from the places and the groups that I was hanging out with. It's also like how I traded options for the most part. I actually had some experience with like scaling and leaving runners and options, but most of it was just like I was just trying to get what I could and get out. I didn't know any better. And to be honest, like I didn't even, you know, when you start trading, you're just like, I think you rush into the trading part and you're forgetting like the strategy or like having risk to reward things, you know, like you just want to start, you just want to get in there and like start doing stuff. And that's not the best way to approach it, but that's where I started.
You know what it is? I think it sounds so easy to just, oh, well, just take a, I'm going to go long or short. I'm going to risk 3 points. I'll just take profit at six. Like, how hard is that?
Right.
You know, it sounds easy, but it's not. How about you, Stub?
I started in a pretty toxic place as I was surrounded by a lot of things that made levels seem to be like a magical idea. And so most of my original trading started based on the idea that there were excellent levels that I could get somehow. And if only I could put a limit order at that level, I could then become, you know, financially independent. I feel like a lot of people have been down that shitty path and they eventually come to realize that like levels aren't magic and it doesn't fucking matter. But yeah, so most of my original execution was limiting into predetermined levels, trying to figure out how to, and then once I got in more deep into my own math about my own process, started to tweak, well, if I take this many off here, leave this many here, what's the plus minus EV on that? And then ultimately I would abandon that entire system for just more of a free flowing thing that we might get into. But yeah. So yeah, I started in Furu horror land and then landed somewhere over here now.
I think we've hit on all the very common starting points for a lot of traders for sure.
Yeah, if the phrase my level triggers you at all, I feel you. I feel you so much.
I think the whole levels thing is going to be a whole separate podcast. What do you think, Leo? That's definitely going to be a good topic.
Cover. Yeah, I mean, that would be very ranty.
Very ranty. Filled with PTSD.
We might have a special rant episodes. Yeah, we might figure that out. Non-educational rant only episodes.
Right, right. So who wants to start us off with what we're doing now?
Leo kind of made it up, so he should probably start.
So AJ and I have been trading together for a while. I don't know how many years, but it's been a few at this point. And last year, I put out Leo's trading playbook. And inside of that trading playbook is a snippet about trade management. And essentially, if you read that, you'll learn about this concept called POSA, which is an acronym that AJ came up with. And I didn't create POSA necessarily, but it was derived from AJ and I kind of going through how I trade and develop my trading over time.
Okay.
The great thing about AJ is that you can tell him something about the way you think about something or the way you're doing something. And like, I have a hard time sometimes being, I guess, like getting concepts out from like what's in my brain out on paper. And AJ is great at taking things like that and, you know, elaborating on them and being very, you know, to the point with some of that stuff. So anyways.
I'm the Leo whisperer.
Yeah. I guess. So anyways, POSA was a way that I developed like through, you know, my own experience, other people. It's nothing like magical, right? But it's just essentially being able to, you know, start a trade with small size, have an area where you want to build a potential position before you put, you know, any additional risk on the table. Once you're in a small size trade, you observe what's happening. Then you allow yourself
It stand for?
Put on risk.
Okay. So yeah, let's go through POSA.
he is putting on the risk. So this would be, you know, you put on a small portion of your ideal trade size. So I start with 20%, and that basically it's kind of a fewer trade, but it's also, we talked about levels earlier. Right. And
yeah.
You know, there are some spots where, you know, you just want to get that price, like at the best possible price you can get and work from there. But then there's also, you know, once you're in a trade, you're much more engaged with the market than you are just as an observer.
There has to be, for any trade, there's got to be some kind of location that you're leaning on. You know, you can't just, all right, as they say, you can't. In the way that we trade, there's a there's an optimal location to be starting your trade. And you want to put some risk on there if you're starting to see, if your idea is playing out and you want to express your position. You know, if you have an area that you want to start a short and you want to get in at that optimal location, you have to start your short when everyone else is mostly buying it. Right? Because you can't sell resistance without someone buying into it. So, you know, putting on some risk is committing to express that idea before you see everything that you need to get full size. So that's why Leo and I and possibly Stowe, we started off with the smallest portion of our position, because we're leaning on location more than anything else at that point in the sequence.
Yeah, the greatest thing I learned from this also is, like, if you see, especially because we trade NQ, it's if you see something start to happen, like, there's a lot of freezing and a lot of, like, hesitation that can happen in that moment. And the biggest way for me to get over that was just, like, I'll just put a lot on or two and see what happens. Like, if my max position size is 6 to 8, then I'm just going to throw two on right here as I see something start to happen. And worst case, I take a stop or whatever, but at least I'm in the game, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. If you qualify an idea enough that you're getting ready to take a trade and you can't put on 20% of your max position, of your ideal position size without a signal, like, I mean, I think we feel that it's worth to act without hesitation on that portion of the sequence, because it's such a small part of your trade. Like, who can't take a 20% stop, right? Not 20% of your daily loss limit, but 20% of, let's say you're risking like $500 a trade. You know, what's $100 for just to get your ideal spot?
Yeah.
And then we observe. So once you get that initial price, your risk, whatever, you watch for what's happening next. And for me, that's going to be, you know, I'm a little more clued in on the DOM, the tape, and some of the tools that I have. But, you know, I'm looking for, okay, now I've got a little piece on. It's a feeler trade. How do I need a position for this to, you know, express that idea, you know, put the full trade on? And it could be a few things. It could be, you know, I've got an area that's, let's say I'm looking for a short. I've got an area that's potentially resistance, but then maybe there's a little spot above it, you know, that's also likely to be resistance as well. And maybe they're within, you know, 10 points of each other, right? We never know, you know, obviously where a market reaction is going to happen, but, you know, these are obviously, you know, everybody's got levels or lines or whatever. So I'm looking at this going, okay, I've got a piece on. Now what I need to see to put the rest on, to put more on. And so that might be, well, I want to see that other price trade. And that sometimes could be against my original entry. And that's fine, because I've only got the small piece on, so it's not a big deal. So it trades above, you know, my entry in this case. And we get to that next price level. And, you know, then we see like an exhaustive, you know, push, you know, on the DOM. Or, you know, some other thing that's like, okay, well, we traded that price, that other resistance level, and there was a bit of a more of a reaction there. So this is where I'll put on another piece. So now we're at 40%, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. So I think it's important to remind people, like, we're order flow traders, right? That's how, it's a huge part of our strategy. So time in sales, the depth of market, price meeting price ladder. Looking at how volume and delta is building in the current rotation that we're in, like using a leg to leg volume and delta profile, and see what's, you're still getting the basically time and sales data, but summarized in profile form, and kind of seeing how that activity is developing around that entry, that initial entry that you took. That's going to be a huge, that's where my eyes are for sure. And based on that, what's happening there. If I don't like what I see, I just will let myself get stopped out on that 20%, or I'll just like leave it and wait for it to start to look better. Right. So it's observing, you know, you don't get to decide how long it really takes for you to see what you want to start adding. You know, there's got to be some kind of visual cue that you're looking for that says, okay, I've taken my little bit here and now I've seen what I need to. So let's go into the next phase of the process, or I haven't, and the market might stop me out, but who cares, because it's such a small piece.
Yeah. And we'll talk about more of this stuff specifically later. Like, if you're in a long and then all of a sudden you see bids being absorbed in that leg to leg profile, like right above where you got long, then you start to think to yourself, like, fuck, this is not necessarily great for me. Like, the Dom will show you fairly quickly if you made a good decision or not. But the thing that I like about this POSA system and just putting a little bit on and seeing what happens is it gives you a lot of freedom to try to sit in the order flow as opposed to sitting in your P&L. And for me, that's really important because I'm trying to observe the market reaction to an area that I'm interested in, not necessarily like worry about my own shit at that time. So the more I can be focused on what the market is actually trying to accomplish and the less I'm focused on my own money, the better that that works out for me.
I think that's actually a really good point because I think a lot of people, and this is something I struggle with this. When I was, you know, all in, basically, I would have a really well thought idea, wait for my price to trade, and then I'm like in, like very quickly. And in reality, I'm uncomfortable very quick because I'm max size, and I haven't, because I got in pretty quickly, I haven't seen maybe enough to have taken that much risk, and I'm immediately uncomfortable because of that potential for a full stop. And it's really like it's a reaction to how much risk you have on more than anything else. So yeah, not having to worry about your P&L while you're trying to observe is a huge thing, I think. Do you want to go
so,
on to
so what's S, Leah? Scale?
This is scaling. So I mean, this is, it really means two things. It means obviously, like at the observation phase, if you've put more size on, then you're in a bigger position. And so the scaling part is, all right, so you got your bigger position on, now what? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If the position goes for you, in favor, whatever, and, down to potentially a target or some spot where you pick that you want to take some profit, then, you can start scaling out. The alternative to that would be, and this is hard to do, but you must, if you're doing this properly, like you should never take a full size stop, right? And it can be tricky, and it's something that you will have to work, if this is something that you adopt, you'll have to work through figuring this part out, because, one of the reasons that I started trading this way is because I hated being in a full size position and not really having, like, kind of felt like I had handcuffs on after that. And so part of that observation and the reason to use order flow is if I'm short and I get, the full size position on, like things are looking pretty good. And then all of a sudden, a flurry of buying steps in and, or bids are being absorbed or, whatever else is going on, I may scale out of that trade and go back to my put on risk size, or I may flatten it completely and wait for more information. And so the reason I say you should never take a full stop using this style is because you, especially with the ability to use information from order flow, you can see clearly when your trade idea is just, it's not going to work or it's not going to work yet. And so it's just kind of like you need more information before you continue. So that's the part of scaling up and down could be, you're scaling to take out profit, to take some base hits so that you can pay for some of the position, or, it just continues to go against you.
Right.
And so, okay, it either continues to go against you or there's no, there's no activity that's like, okay, this idea, this trade idea isn't really supported by, the market players that are moving the market. And so, you should be scaling out and going back to that put on risk, position, or just being flat.
Now, this part involves, I think, the most amount of discipline required of this entire system is, like, you have to be 1,000% honest with yourself while you're in this thing. Like with your position size, with where you're taking profit, with where you're adding and where you're taking partial stop outs. Like, I don't know. Leo, how do you manage that? How do you manage that part of that discipline? Because that was the, because to start it just from a person that tried to begin it like a year ago or whenever I first tried to start to figure this out, I maybe also just am still figuring it out too. How do you manage that scaling in a way where like, how do you know when you're wrong? How do you know when you're right? How do you know when to press? All those questions.
I mean, that's, you know, I would say like you said, discipline, right? Like, how do you manage that? You have to be honest with yourself about what you're seeing and not what your position is. And that takes, you know, that honesty. It requires you to be real about, like, sometimes I know, you never know, right? But you have like this instinct, like after so many, you know, hours of screen time, you just develop this instinct to where, okay, maybe I shouldn't be in full size right now, right?
Yeah, you know you're fucked when you're fucked, yeah.
Yeah, like it's not like a, you know, thing. It's just like, you know, you have that gut instinct to go, okay, I know I'm wrong, or like I'm wrong right now. Wrong and wrong right now are the same thing. But anyways, if you're honest with yourself about what you're seeing and observing and you act accordingly, it will never be a problem, right? Because you will act in accordance to the information that you're getting from the market. And that is the essence of utilizing order flow tools or maybe other systems. If you have a way to identify, you know, strength from one side of the market that's pushing against the other, and you're in a position and, you know, you know with this sense that the position's, you know, ultimately not working out, you have to be honest with yourself about that.
You could utilize any systematic approach that has proven to keep your shit in check, you know. We use, you know, order flow tools for confirmation, but if you have a candlestick pattern that works for you in this instance, when that proves that your long is fucked, you know, I don't look at candlestick shapes. That shit doesn't make any sense to me, but some people do. I don't know. Anything that keeps you out of trouble is a good idea.
So I think that there's, you know, a lot of flexibility, and we'll finish obviously the acronym, but there's a lot of flexibility within this framework.
There's no F in the acronym for flexibility, but
no, there's not. Not yet. Okay. Not yet. We can add.
I just wanted to tell the kids that there's no acronym for that.
Yeah. So I do something a little bit differently, I have my own tweak to it that kind of addresses what you're talking
about. Surprise, surprise.
Well, it's not. It's still the same framework, but I'm a little bit more willing to take a full stop than Leo is.
Okay.
I the goal is to not take a full stop for sure.
My broker loves me. Yours doesn't love me as much.
Leo has a lot more commissions than I do, but he's able to do that much better because I have a tendency to overreact to DOM activity sometimes. Like if I see something that happens really quick, I might scale out of my trade too quickly and I shouldn't have. So when I'm scaling in, I'm giving my trade as much room as I can, and I'm going to scale out as a scalp to pay for the risk as much of the risk as I can. And then I'm just going to let the market prove me right or wrong. Because if I scale up and down too much, I start to just get sloppy. I mean, to put it simply, I think Leo's a little more proficient at objectively reading the DOM and reacting to it very quickly. Whereas I can get quick trigger fingers and my execute, it just gets out of hand. I just end up mismanaging the trade by being overly active. So, you know, the goal is with this that, you know, if I'm putting on, let's say my sizing for the day is 10 lots, you know, 20 points, it's very rare that I would take a 200 point stop like a full stop, which would be 200 points. But I'm fine taking, you know, 12 to 15 points on 10 lots. So like a 60 to 75% stop out. I'll take that if I can put my stop somewhere that I feel it's safe and that also gives the trade some space to work. So, you know, I don't want to get stopped out all the way, and it doesn't happen all the time. I'm usually able to get some off the profit to scale down and pay for some of my trade, but it does happen. And I've found that over the long term, like being willing to take a, you know, medium sized hit is better for me than trying to be overactive. But doesn't mean it can't be done. It's just a slight adjustment that I need to make for myself to kind of stay in my good trades.
Well, it also gets to the point too where it's like how much below your or above your idea can you be without just like holding on to hope at that point or cope or whatever the fuck, you know. You should just take the stop and get back in later if it proves yourself right. You're gonna save yourself so many points doing that. Like,
yeah, the number of trades where I have where I, you know, got an entry, took some scales down, put my stop somewhere, and then I get stopped out, and then within a minute or within a couple minutes, like see that it was possibly a stop run and just get right back in where I got stopped out once I've observed the activity I want to see. Like, absolutely. It happens all the time. And
that's fine. You have to be so comfortable with doing that too.
Yeah, absolutely. If especially, yes, you have to be comfortable with that, especially with NQ. I mean, it can just wick you out really quick, and that's it. NQ seems to find me personally quite a bit. I know we've already hit on that, but my stop out is a setup on itself.
Well, Leo, the A in POSA is the trickiest one. You want to talk about it?
It can be tricky, but it doesn't have to be.
Sorry, for me. I was talking about my own personal life, I guess.
So the A is add for momentum. And I think that really depends on market environment and what you define as momentum. And what I mean by that is when I say market environment could be, are we in a balance session and you're just buying the bottom of balance, looking for a rotation back through, you know, adding for momentum. And that would be, you put on the risk, you have a observation of the response, then you're on like, you know, 40% of the trade. And then on that momentum push out of that area, you know, you immediately kind of pile in the last piece. To me, that would be a optimal execution of a add for momentum type of move when we're in a balanced environment, to where your core position or your average price essentially is near the lower end of that balanced range, right? The other piece of adding for momentum would be the opposite end of the spectrum. And that would be we're out of balance. So we're in an imbalance. So that would be there are single prints, there's a breakout, there's a breakdown, you know, something, the market is moving in a one directional way, in a union, a single direction way. And that would be you got the direction right. You scaled out of most of your position. And so you're back down to, you know, maybe 20 or 30% of your trade size. And adding for momentum here would be once a break, you know, occurs, a key structural reference or where you would consider, you know, if you're long and you have a resistance that gets broken, maybe that's a point for you to add for that momentum. Or maybe your add for momentum is, you know, you're long, the market rotates higher, and then comes to a point where you would expect, you know, participants to rebid that area, like a pullback with, you know, in that direction. You know, you're still trading like as a continuation trade. You could add for momentum there as right. A continuation trade.
I think there's so many adding for momentum. I think you hit a lot of the good ones. And I think adding for momentum can mean so many different things for
it's
so many.
So hard,
people.
Dude.
So it's hard. You hit on a lot of good ones, but it's gonna come down, I think, to every trader to know their setups well enough to know what conditions lead to their trades, like finding momentum. Does it need to be a structural break? Can it just be some kind of, can it be market context? Like the bigger picture, like if we're in a multi-day liquidation and you're short, can, you know, what does that mean for the type of setups that you're taking? It's going to be different, but I will say that I think, I, at least speaking for myself, the ability to add to winners was a game changer for me, for sure. Because, you know, I definitely find that I make most of my money on the minority of my trades being ones that run and run and run. So being able to really capture those legs that I get that just go was really great for kind of, you know, skewing the you know, positive expectancy curve in my favor.
Yeah.
And it's something that takes a lot of practice.
One thing that really helped me with adding to trades, I'm still really working on it. I'm nowhere near good enough to talk about this for sure. So please take that with a grain of salt. But one thing that really helped me with adding to trades is I was able to find the ability to buy the spot where I sold my last runner. And being able to do that, you can start to see the different rotations that are happening within the day. And like if I was long 650, let my runner go at 750, price moons to 950, comes back to 730 and then gets back above 750, I may be interested in another trade there. But that is another way to look at the broader picture of what your trade was actually trying to do. And maybe you captured more of that market than you were planning to capture. But the fact that you should get comfortable with being able to re-enter where you got out last, because it might still be working for you. And that's another way that you can think about adding to trades is like, is this trade still working?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
No, definitely. There's a lot of ways to do it. And there's definitely, I think, untapped edge for a lot of traders out there that kind of haven't experimented with this element of execution. And this is like the execution overview where we're talking about our framework of POSA, which we just hit on. We're going to go into more detail about, you know, all of the finer details, like putting on stop, like how we manage our stops, how to pick targets, how to hold trades, how to add to trades. So this is going to be an ongoing segment where we go into more detail on all these things. But I think, yeah, we did a good job, pretty good job of going through the overview for sure. What do you think, guys?
We'll let the listeners be the judge.
We're going to get hit with people saying no, all in, all out is the only way.
And the important thing.
You know what? I actually, this is like the hottest take I had on the internet a couple of weeks ago was maybe you should use a stop.
Here it comes, folks, the hottest day.
And maybe you should use a daily loss limit. And it was like the most controversial thing that I've said on Twitter.
Maybe you should have the two most basic elements of risk management. You know, everyone's up in arms about it.
Well, it's not optimal.
No, that's negative EV.
Well, there are a lot of positives to the things that we talked about today. There are a lot of like ways to be able to interact with the market in a more fluid way and not necessarily be restricted by a full stop every time you enter a trade. There's also a lot of negatives to what we're talking about. It involves a lot of discipline. It involves a lot of honesty with yourself. I don't know how many people are listening to this that like they're not there yet where they understand the intricacies of that.
I mean, it took me once, I think, from the first time Leo started showing me those fills and I saw what he was doing until I actually got proficient with it. It took me probably, I would say, 3 to 4 months just to get, you know, decently competent with it. And then it was that was without even adding to trades. That was just posts. No, in the end there. So
the hardest part. I'm still working on that.
Yeah, it took a lot longer to straighten that out for sure.
But yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this and you want to rethink the way that you are executing your trades, First, if the way that you're executing your trades is working, maybe don't rethink that. And then also second, try this scaling idea in sim. Don't think about it in any other way other than like an experiment. Like, what does this feel like to only get in for 20% at this moment? Mm-hmm. And then see what happens. When I did that, my observation was that you're much more in tune with what the market is actually doing. And you've really forgotten about your position. And you're really starting to try to work with, you know, the order flow. And that can be a detriment too, where like AJ said, like the Dom is a tricky motherfucker and it will trick the shit out of you constantly. I don't know. It's a cool idea. And it's something that we work on all the time. So
I'm sure the people with the, you know, the idea that like, well, if you had edge, you wouldn't care about any of this stuff are going to definitely come in the comments.
What the fuck is edge though? I mean, like, dude, we're just slapping lots around. It's fine.
Those are the words of people with no edge in their execution. You know, we've managed to find edge in execution. And I think that's a great thing.
I think that's how we execute. I think we talked about it.
I think we nailed it.
Indeed.
So why don't we move on to our next topic, which we actually teased a little bit at the beginning of the episode. So another one of this regular segments that we're going to be doing is we're going to do a little bit of ranting and about a hot topic that we want to complain about to you all. So you'll get to hear us bitch and moan about something for not as long as the educational segment, but just things we got to get off our chests for one reason or another.
AJ,
and yes,
the stock market has 252 trading days in a year.
Mm-hmm.
How many of them are safe?
Did we get an extra one for leap year this year?
I think we might have as a quarter.
Did you do the math on this?
Hold on. So wait, the topic is, before we dive into it, the topic is the whole concept of not safe to trade. So that's what we're hitting on right here. And I think we do have 250 trading days in a year, and we've done the math. Do you have those numbers, Stowe?
I got them. Okay. So there are 12 CPI days, 8 FOMC days, 4 PCE days, 12 non-farm payrolls, 12 OPECs, 20 roll weeks.
The 20 days of roll week.
Right, correct. Right. And then also 20 weeks before the roll week, because you never want to trade necessarily the week before roll.
Definitely not safe.
There are 8 partial holidays, which means half days to trade. There are 20 tech earnings weeks, if you can imagine that. And there are 12 times that the month ends.
So total number of days that are not safe are 128 days.
Half the year.
Half the year is not safe. And that's not even like taking into consideration like Fridays as a general day, which I know a lot of people don't trade. So
yeah.
we're being conservative in our estimate of safety.
Yeah. And for all of you traders who went and did the math and said, there's 250 days to trade, and I need to make average XP&L per day for this thing to be worth my time, you need to divide that 250 in half, because literally half of those days just aren't safe.
Sometimes.
So your P&L actually needs to be double what you think.
So I think, and you might, so for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, there are people on, you know, throughout the entire Twitter community on Twitter and in Discord that will like basically point to a data drop or some kind of event that's happening or about to happen, or just maybe they won't even tell you why, but they'll just say, you know, be careful, it's probably not safe to trade. And I think that chaps all of our asses for different reasons.
Extremely. I'm sure we all have a different reason, but AJ, do you want to go with your reasons?
Sure. I mean, to put it simply, like, I just think that you are totally full of shit if you go and tell a bunch of other traders that you know nothing about, like when they should or should not be able to deploy their capital. Like, who are you to tell me that I can't fucking trade because you saw something either on investing.com calendar or some number on your chart that makes you uncomfortable? Now I have to do nothing. I think it's just ridiculous. Nobody
knows.
And
this is not to say that, like, for new traders, you should definitely be aware of when news is occurring in the marketplace.
No doubt.
You should look at that historically and see what happens, because the book gets extremely thin and there aren't a lot of people participating in it. So because this is an auction, it becomes less of an auction because there aren't that many buyers and sellers. It needs about 30 to 45 seconds to figure itself back out again. And then it's usually back to what it was normally up to. And then it decides what it's going to do with that news information. Like, some news is bigger than others. Some FOMC minutes are fucking batshit crazy. Some are Jackson Hole. Some are, we're just going to do the same shit we're actually always going to do.
We actually didn't put Jackson Hole and the minutes on our list. That's a few more days.
That's even more days you can't trade.
Now, obviously, to your point, you've got to know when data's coming out. I personally, I'm not like long into CPI. I'm never in a position in CPI.
Right.
I'm never doubling my size right before Powell starts to, talking after the FOMC notes drop. And we're all going to find days for ourselves that are better for us to sit out. Like, I know when my days are not safe to trade. I have them, but I don't go on the internet and act like because I get my shit pushed in, like on FOMC days or, the A period after CPI, that everyone else also needs to do that. No, there's a hole in my system, and I know when that is, and I know when it's not safe for me. But that might be some, like, my day not to trade might be someone else's day where they make their month. And who am I to go on the internet and tell anyone else when they should or should not be putting at risk? It's just ridiculous.
What about you, Big Cat? What'd you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually not even safe to say this. It's not safe because you're putting doubt within the new traders out there that, there isn't actually a bid and offer at every price level for 1,000 price levels, certain days. Like, all of a sudden we could have a limit down or a limit up because, nobody's going to interact on this specific day, which is not the case. There's generally always good liquidity. I mean, that's one of the benefits of trading futures. And, there are days where personally I thrive. I know other people thrive, and other people with different strategies may suffer. If you're looking for a directional move and you get a balanced day, you may say that's not a safe day to trade because it's just chop. But if you're a balanced, if you thrive in that balanced environment, like, you're printing money on every, up and down rotation.
Exactly.
So I think it's just the idea that it's not safe is it's silly. It's silly because unless there's no liquidity, like there's no bids, there's no offers, there's no way to conduct, if you get slipped, 100 points or something, if you're at risk for a limit down event, then that's different, right? Maybe it's not the best idea to trade in that environment, but it's not like that, happens on a regular basis, right?
Yeah, that environment is not the news, man. Like, that environment is, if you're in an environment where you got slipped 100 points, you probably have more shit to worry about than the 100 points you just lost. Like, you're probably like, okay, let's get in the fucking car and go to a mountain because a tsunami's coming or something.
400
that shit crazy.
400 tick spread in NQ.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, if you're using proper risk management, even the most unsafe environment should only be risking your daily loss limit.
Yeah.
And you can hit that by being an asshole on a safe or unsafe day. You know, it's not act like the market environment is the only thing that is going to cause you to lose money. You're as much a danger to your account than any news event or, you know, type of price action that you're going to engage with. Like, you just wake up on the wrong side of the bed and start acting like an asshole. You know, that's not safe. I don't see, you know, it's, you just can't predict. It just chaps my head.
The other thing that's really important and why I think this is super fucking toxic when people say this is not a safe day to trade stuff, is there are setups everywhere for everyone. Every trader is going to be able to find their own specific setup within their own specific kind of day, in their own specific regime or whatever the fuck. And there are really good setups leading up to FOMC minute drops. That entire day is not safe. It's a really good day to trade because people are positioning, anticipating a thing. And when that sort of thing happens, some traders thrive off of that environment. That's just one tiny example, but like every trader has to come up with their own fucking setups and their own shit, their own pattern recognition stuff that makes sense to them. How dare you eliminate half those fucking days from these people? Like, this is, they're gonna get fucking destroyed.
I'm convinced that people, just like the people that do go out and say it, right? They're just doing it so that their followers, whoever's listening to them, are like, oh, you know what? Dude, I got ran over today. You were totally right. You know?
Absolutely. Like, it's 100% engagement. It's 100% to back up subscriptions. It's 100% to do all those things. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right, dude, you're so smart. I'm never trading X data event again. Like, I don't know why I didn't listen to you the first time, you know?
Yep.
Like, shut the hell up. It's because we had a data drop that lasted, you know, 15 fucking minutes. That's why you blew up that day. Most likely not. Unless you were long the data event, but
we can get into sub-seller psychology eventually someday, maybe. But but yeah, the moral of this story is no day is safe to trade, really, because you can always lose money or you can always make money. This is, especially with NQ, it is the land of infinite opportunity and infinite despair. Right. And you get to pick.
You want to know when it's safe, figure it the fuck out for yourself and keep it to yourself once you figure it out. Because don't discourage anyone else from doing what they need to do in the markets.
All righty. So we're going to dive into trade reviews. And this is a normal segment of each episode. And bonus points for anybody that sends us a trade, Phil, and wants us to review them, we'll be happy to do so.
Ooh, that's
but until. Until that point, we'll just review some of our own. So
I feel like you just opened Pandora's box there.
Send us the DMs.
Yeah, let's DM us your trade reviews at paint_the_tape mm-hmm. on Twitter. X, fuck.
So anyways, today is April the 24th. It's a Wednesday. No, it is a Wednesday. Jesus.
Yep. This Wednesday.
Okay, so we're reviewing a trade that I took on Friday the 19th. And what happened prior to this session was particularly important in the sense that we've been in a bit of a breakdown from a longer time frame balance. And overnight, on Thursday night, there was all kinds of, let's say, warish news things going on, in which NQ had liquidated, you know, a good 300 points or so. And there was all kinds of talk about, you know, what's going on with Israel and Iran and da 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 da. And we woke up Friday morning and we had retraced that entire move. But there was a few things that stuck out to me on that retrace. And one of them was in the overnight session or pre-market at this point, we had made a high that basically closed or got near prior day's close or settlement, and we opened in a gap. And so we open in a gap down below the prior day low, obviously. That's what a gap is. And the overnight profile, from a volume profile standpoint, had a little LVN around, on this chart I'll be referencing, around 1504-ish, and call it a zone from 04 to 08 or 0 to 12. So there's this LVN here, and we have a gap above us. And initially, right at the open, we just have like straight selling out of the gates. And I jump in right in on that momentum. And I often will do that if I have, you know, some conditions. And, you know, in this case, it's, we have a gap down, we have incredible selling right out the gates, and I just want to participate in that selling right away. So luckily enough, you know, I was able to take some off for, I think, 30 points or so from the 84s through 52. So maybe 30 points. And then I held, you know, some, you know, holding runners for me is key to my strategy. And also adding to the position, as we just discussed, is also another key. So I held some, took some off, held some, and then re-entered or added more on this pullback to the OR mid. And the OR is the shaded part of this zone that we're looking at. So I add some to the OR, and then I add a little bit higher, and then ultimately stop out of the trade. But then immediately re-enter once the, you know, order flow activity on the DOM, and I saw a little bit of exhaustion on that stop out, which oddly enough, not oddly, it's pretty common. I top ticked the stop, and, you know, looked like it was a good spot to re-enter. So I did.
Yeah, classic.
Re-entered the trade.
And we talked about that before. Like, you got to be able to jump back in.
Right. So that's me doing what I do day to day. And I think I actually held a few on that stop out. So I didn't exit the full trade. But, you know, basically, for all intents and purposes, you know, left most of the trade out, or cut most of the trade, and then re-entered once, you know, looked a little better, you know, the DOM and the time of sale. So re-entered the trade and scaled out. And for me, scaling out is, you know, I'm looking at the targets of the OR mid, and, you know, we pushed down so fast that, you know, I was able to hold on a little longer there. So I got the OR mid, and then I got the OR low, and then got to the pivot, which is a structural reference for me. But if you look to the left, there's this distribution from the overnight profile where, you know, you have this high volume edge plus the overnight VPOC, or volume point of control. So that's the highest traded price from the overnight session. So those, all of that was, you know, confluence together. So covered a bunch there and left, I think, one runner on. And then we come back to that same OR mid area again, and I add to the position again, as is part of my normal strategy. And what I saw was just incredible buying right through that whole area. And so I stop out myself before any of my stops got taken out. I just flattened out of the trade because I was like, it's very clearly buying. There's definitely going, you know, looks like a full rotation through this OR is going to occur. And I'm just going to wait for something else to happen. So at that point, I'm flat. And then, you know, we wait, you know, for some more information. We test that OR high. And as you can see, there's a little wick. And once we push that OR high and we start to press against the OR high in 96 and push a bit lower. So at that point, I enter another short as I'm still looking to trade in the direction of this gap. And we push down a little bit. I added a little bit. So that's the add for momentum piece. And then guess what? We just decided to run it up against me a little more. So at that point, I scaled out of some of the position, but left some on. And then again, I saw more of an exhaustive push into the 12s that, you know, that was pretty similar to the exhaustive push that I saw at the earlier spot. And so I added, you know, more of a full size position at that point. and we rotated down. And so then I scaled out at the same, you know, targets that I would look for, which would be the mid, which I probably front ran a little bit unnecessarily, but you know, that's trading.
Yeah.
And then
it's going to get wiggly, you know,
it's going to get wiggly for sure. And then I took most of the rest of the position off at the OR low, and I did not let anything else run, because at this point I've traded, you know, the open as well as I could for that session. And, you know, I'm looking at this pivot slash, you know, high volume node from Globex thinking, okay, well, like, this is support. So maybe my short is, you know, it's good enough. And, you know, call it that and let's wait for more information on what to do next. So
that's an interesting point too. Like, do you guys divide your trading days up into, you know, times of day like that, where you're like what you just said, Leo, you're like, well, this was the open. Now the open is over. We have an established range. I'm going to take my position off and see what happens next. Like, is that often what you folks do? Or
yeah, I think, I mean, for me, yes. I definitely think of it that way, as like the open is an event in itself, right? Like the bell rings,
yeah,
the most volume comes in that 30-minute period. You know, you can pick off a few trades there. You establish some type of range in that 30-minute period or in that first hour. And within that, establishing that range, you learn more information about what the other participants are wanting to do with respect to volume and, you know, price.
Yep.
So for me, it was like, you know, I had three really great trades. You know, I kept my risk in check and my rewards, you know, like the, you know, we talk about risk or reward all the time. You know, the profit I took was much greater than the risk where, you know, where I was stopped out. So for me, it was like, okay, again, this is going to go against some of the stuff that people say about, you know, if you have edge, you don't have to worry about your mental game or mental capital. But I do. Like, I consistently perform better when I'm in a good headspace and when my mental capital is strong.
Right.
So for me, I look at this and go, okay, well, I had three. One, it's one, you know, overall sequence or an idea to me. But it's, you know, three kind of distinct trades that were taken and that one idea that all, you know, worked out and paid well. So it's a chance for me to reset and, you know, let's see what we do with this range kind of idea.
Yeah. One of the big breakthrough things for me was to realize that like some of my setups and some of the ways that I need to treat the market are time dependent as well. And like, why am I trying to have expectations for the market when it's only been open for 15 minutes?
I go back and forth on it. I definitely do my best work probably after the first 30 minutes. But man, there are some days where a period, when I can get it, when I get a, you know, a good look, it sets the pace for the whole day. And then there are other times when those first 20 minutes, I just do so much damage to myself and I go in a hole and it ruins the whole session. So I go back and forth. There's a couple things I try. I try to size down a little bit off the open, like the first 15 or so minutes. I try, sometimes I'll just sit it out if there's, you know, if we have a data release at, you know, 15 or 30 minutes in.
Yeah, that's true.
There's
sometimes there are those Thursdays where it's like 9:45, 10:30, or 9:30.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 10:30, so, yeah.
I go back and forth. I would say that the first like 15 to 25 minutes are definitely the most dangerous for me, but I do trade them if I get a really clear look, because, I mean, if you've got a setup and it checks every box and you get an execution signal firing, you know, I don't have the stats to tell me that those setups don't work in the first 15 minutes. It's more of a anecdotal experience thing for me.
Yeah. All right, AJ, what? You got the loser?
Yes. So I do have the loser. We're going to show a winner and a loser every day. I have the pleasure of showing my losing trade today. So my trade is from April 16th. The context is that Monday, April 15th, we dumped ass 500 points in the first, you know, couple hours of the session. We spent the afternoon kind of balancing at the lows, and we spent the overnight session balanced as well. So, you know, my read is, all right, we sold the piss out of the market and then we took a break. And, you know, my thought is, are we going to continue this leg down? So a couple things that I see happen before the open is we kind of made a bit of a double top on the overnight. Like we had a push-up response, came back to that area that we had a responsive move down and sold again. And we sold actually through the entire overnight profile value area. So off the bat, I'm kind of just like, where am I going to see larger participants like kind of absorbing buying for a push? So that's what I'm looking for coming into the session. I want to see if the offer is strong. That way we can get more downside. So we spend the first, looks like 6 or 7 minutes kind of grinding, right around overnight POC and right around 24-hour VWAP. We eventually get a bit of a pop and then a push down into the previous month low. You'll notice two things. One, there's a exhaustion signal notated by a blue transparent bubble at the top of that rotation. And there's also an exhaustion signal, downside exhaustion signal at the previous month low notated by a red bubble. So I've seen also on the right side, you'll see leg to leg profiles from the open of that session. So you'll see absorption at the highs in the form, a lot of accumulated offer delta in the 80s. And you'll see, you know, a small build at the top of the profile, also in that same area around the 80s. So when we get that push down, what I see is I see absorption and exhaustion at the highs in the direction that I wanted it to happen. And I also see exhaustion at the low at an area that I can definitely see being support. So I've seen what I want to take my short trade, but I also see that, you know, it's possible that we may I see the other side of the narrative, right? I can see why we might not get more follow through the previous month low, and I don't care, right? As someone's always going to be on the other side of your trade. I've qualified my setup, and I'm going to take it. Well, that's what I did. So,
The best case you can get is getting as close as you can to this is exactly where the trade is wrong and this is where I'm in, right?
Right. I think it's good to know. It's good to see the other side. There's a bit of power in that, in the fact that you can be objective in seeing what's happening against you and kind of acknowledge it, opposed to only seeing your side and just kind of getting tunnel vision a bit on the price action.
Absolutely.
So I see the narrative for why I shouldn't take this trade, but I've qualified my setup through all the signals I like, so I'm going to fucking take it. And I did. I scaled in around the previous day close. You see me take a couple scale outs. That's the first portion of my position to pay for some of my risk. I then scale out more. I take one more piece at the previous day low, another piece at the previous month low. So I've more than paid for my trade, but I'm still holding, I want to say about 30%, give or take, probably somewhere between 30 and 40% of my size. I think I put on 10, and here I've taken off 5 or 6, or probably 6 or 7, sorry. So I'm holding 3. They've been more than paid for. And we make in the intraday rotations, we made a lower high from my entry, and then we made a lower low. So I'm feeling pretty good, right? I mean, we're still pushing down. I then get another push after we hit the previous month low. We kind of come back to my entry a little bit lower than that, and we pause. And so, as is dictated by my execution style, I'm happy to add again. I'll take this trade again, right? It's effectively the same trade. We're pushing down. We've now re-offered this spot again. All the structure is still intact, so I take another ad. So now I've got 13 on, and I've probably paid for like half of them. I'm going to say half of them. My overall P&L and what I've taken off in that first trade.
Right.
And so I've got a decent amount of risk on the table here, but I love this. Everything I'm seeing, I'm loving. And then we kind of hang out, and I'm probably looking to take a little bit more profit somewhere in the 50s for my next scale outs. But where we're at on the day is we're right above 24-hour VWAP. And right after I take the second ad, I can see them just bidding VWAP on the Dom. I got my second entry. We're just hanging out. I want to say it takes about 8 minutes where we're just hanging out in VWAP, but I'm watching it on the Dom. Like, they're selling 64, 65, 66. It's just not getting anywhere. So I cut a little bit. You'll see I took one more scale out kind of at 60, which is not where I wanted to, but because of the activity I'm seeing, I'm like, let me just take a little bit. Let me de-risk a little bit more here. Once I do that, it's worth noting that my stop on this sequence is in the mid to high 90s, so probably somewhere like 96, 97. And now that I've de-risked, where my head's at is like, well, I can see the narrative for this, you know, going much higher, or for my trade to not work, basically. And I don't really think that I need to give it as much room as I have for me to, you know, decide whether or not I want to stay in this trade. So I've basically, once I take that scale out and I'm kind of assessing where I'm at, I'm like, I'm going to cut this before I get stopped out if I start to see a lot of buying, because I can see why we can get a good push. They're bidding VWAP. Like, if the sellers that I thought I joined were strong enough, I would have gotten much lower for take profits. I'm like, I'm ready to cut this trade if I don't see what I like. And that's basically what happened. You'll see that we got a lot of buying come in that's notated by some of the color bars that I have. And I cut my trade before it stopped me out. And if I had not cut my trade, it would have stopped me out and I would have taken a bigger hit. So yeah, I'm happy with how I executed this. I would take this setup, I would trade this setup the exact same way every time. I didn't get another push down in this scenario. And I probably took a three quarter stop on it.
I really like the way that you moved your stop in at the end.
Yeah.
When you started to see the other side of the trade, but you still gave it enough room to work. And I think that is something that happens a lot when you've had the opportunity to sit in a trade for, you know, 15 minutes. And also add to it. And you're like, okay, well, I really know where this is wrong. If I'm being completely honest with myself, I can be wrong right here. And if I, you know, if it ticks my stop and goes back in, just smash right back in. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm engaged to the trade for, I want to say, at least 20, probably 25 minutes. Like, I'm clued, like, the entire time in this trade, like, I'm clued in to everything I want. I'm watching the tape. I'm watching the Dom. I've been able to my execution is flowing the way I want it to. So I'm pretty clear during this sequence, what I want to do and when. And it's, yeah, I mean, it didn't work, but I mean, I'm happy with how this looks for sure.
Cool. This is a good way to lose.
It's a good way to lose. I mean, listen, you guys will see me say, some people might look at this and say, oh, well, your first trade was like great. If you had just like taken off more and not added, like you would have had a profitable sequence. And that is for sure true. But over time, you know, the more trades we review, you will see what this looks like when it works. And it's a fucking beautiful thing. When you're willing to keep adding and adding and adding, and it finally goes, and I know that it's a benefit to my P&L for me to not make money on this sequence, because when it works, it makes up for it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
The hindsight bros are going to come after you, I think.
The hindsight bros? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Of course. What, every hindsight bro is going to come after fucking everything.
Oh, because
you could have done this. You could have done that.
Yeah. No one fucking trades anything in reality.
Dude. If yeah, the hindsight bro is for sure. I mean, they're right. If I had known this was going to happen, I would have gotten triple size on that first one. And then obviously never.
Well, you know, they're going to have the chart that posts why you shouldn't have been in the store in the first place and all that good stuff too. So,
well, I'm ready for it. We got to take criticism of qualities over here. We're going to put our stuff on the internet. We've got to be ready for it, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
So bring your hindsight analysis to me. I'd love to see it.
All right. Well, this has been episode 2 of Painting the Tape. Mm-hmm. Painting the Tape. Not paint the tape. Painting the Tape. It would really help us out if you gave us feedback about this project that we're up to. You can give us feedback by sending us DMs on Twitter, I guess. That's going to be Leo's problem. Or you
the fuck?
Yeah, well, I mean, you got the login, bro. You're fucked. Or you could retweet and like it and share it with your friends. We're trying to make a podcast that is for intraday traders about intraday trading, what that actually looks like. And yeah, it's still kind of in an experiment phase. So any feedback is welcome. Follow us on the Spotify's and whatever the fuck else. I assume that helps too. And other than that, I don't know. See you next time.
Thanks for listening.
See ya.